By trail straight Killerville, dog, 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 dog. Beats by Trill Straight Killerville, dog, 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 dog.
We are back. Another live from Vietnam Friday. I'm the one and only Paul Masson, and I'm joined by the hip hop historian, Mr. J. Trillanoy's Tracks is going to be late due to the riots in D.C. Oh, man, that's crazy. We got some new news. We got, as you see in the intro, we got Kyan, the Lion King. On what was that? What day was that? June 28th?
Yeah, June 28th.
We got Hakeem Green from Channel Live tomorrow before we do music reviews at 5 p.m. We also got Smooth the Hustler June the 1st. Damn, you know what, Jay? UG from Cellar Dwellers, man, called us on the Instagram, man, but I missed the call. And I know he was calling about the message I sent about the interview, man. So I got to follow up with that. UG would be a really great guy to have on this show, I think.
Yeah, man. Hit us back. Hit us back. Like I said, I'm still working on some things, too. Of course, we've got Bishop Omega.
Yeah, Bishop Omega.
He should be coming. Still trying to work on the Cooley High. Cooley High, come on and hit us up. Let us know what's going on. There's a few others I'm trying to work on it and see if we can get them to come on the show. So,
you know what I mean? Any word from tonight's guest yet? I know he just shared the post recently.
Yeah, he should be ready to go.
So, anything we should chop it up about? Well, let's chop it up about the Ghostface album. Did you listen to it? I heard some people that did listen to it and they said it was the first half was pretty good, and then it started going all over the place.
No, I didn't get a chance to listen to it. I've heard the first single, "Scar Tissue." That's definitely a dope one. I'm looking forward to trying to get ahead and listen to it in its entirety. I don't know. I mean, certain people may feel like, you know, some of it fell off, but I mean, with that initial single, just the pacing on that album, I would feel like, you know, it should be a dope album.
I will say this, Ghostface has the best catalog as far as the soloists go. Mm-hmm. You know, like there was that album he did with, I don't know the name of it, but it had AZ all over it. It had Kool G Rap all over it, and they played like different characters. It was like a storyline through the whole album, and they had different characters coming in. AZ was a character, Kool G Rap was a character. I thought that one was really dope. You know, Ghost has definitely solidified himself as the best soloist out of the Wu, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think followed quickly behind by Jizzy. So I mean, you know. He definitely keeps releasing good material, definitely stays out here, stays active. I think Method's got a new one out too. Method Man just got a new joint out.
I'm trying to remember. Did you see that? Okay. You see that video that Curtis King got with Scarface talking about the artists need to leave streaming?
No, I hadn't heard about that.
Oh man, I gotta send it to you. Like Scarface went in, man. It was so funny. He was like, I'm gonna try to be I think he said disrespectful as possible. And he said something about, yeah, what'd he say? He's like, yeah, who is these dicks that's controlling the industry? Cause we getting fucked. And shit. I was like, damn, man. Like it makes a lot of sense, man. But like, I think people let streaming go on a little too long. The major artists, these old school artists, these major independents, I think they let it go on a little too long, man. I really do.
I think the problem with streaming is, you know, we don't have a union like the actors have a union. You know what I'm saying? You can press for things if you have a union. If you have a united front, people won't be able to continue to say, well, we're spending this much money on keeping the servers up, so, and the lawyers and the licensing and this, that, and the other. You know, we could press for more money. So, I mean, basically, until we get that together, you know.
Like you said, the artists are making no money off of streaming, but the labels and Spotify and the streaming services are making money off of the subscriptions. I mean, like, streaming had, the more I think about it, and, you know, I got my music on the streaming platforms as well, but as I think about it, I've devalued my music. Even, you know, I don't know what the value of my music was before I hit the streaming platforms because I didn't have a large fan base. But even then, I've devalued it because we went from this place where I could sell one song in the 90s and like $2.99 for a single and make $3,000. Now, if I get 1,000 people listening to my song, I get $4. I mean, I could buy myself, what, a sandwich?
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing. You're fighting another issue as well, because even if you took it off streaming and stopped streaming altogether and shut everything down, now you have to deal with the algorithms on social media, because that's the only medium to really get your music out there other than having your own website. But then you still have to point people to your website.
You do, but you don't necessarily, this is the thing, you don't necessarily got to use, see, people are confused thinking that you only got to use social media to advertise your brand. People are starting to look past things like SEO, that this is the thing, if everybody say, oh, well, SEO don't got a lot of value no more, we're all going to run it over here and we're all going to do this. Well, then that means that you could still do SEO and it's more of a, you know, less competition for you. Cause you know how SEO is, it's all about search terms, you know? Yeah. And when you type in a search term, when you're running your ads, your website will go at the top of that, you know, search term on Google, that the ads always show up first. And then whatever website has the highest rankings, then they show up after the ads. But you can always, that's the thing. If you can't get number one on the rankings, oh well, you could just advertise and still get boosted above the cats who got number one on the rankings. You know, so it's going to put your joint first. People are still going to see it, you know. And I think like you could do like Bandcamp and try SEO. You don't necessarily have to use Facebook or Instagram. You can use SEO to bring traffic to your website. Or you can use direct advertising. There's advertising platforms that are not social media platforms that you could just run straight traffic to your website, like banner advertisement and stuff like that, you know? Like, and a lot of artists never did SEO in the first place. You know, artists have always been slipping on SEO. A lot of artists have always been slipping on, like, banner advertisement and stuff like that. Or, like, there's other sites, like, other search engine sites, like, ExactSeq, where you could just pay for like number one placement for whatever keyword every time they search that keyword on like 300 something search engines, you know. So there's other ways to advertise. It's just people start following trends too much and then they forget about things. They like, oh, you know, like TikTok is the pop, you know, Lil Nas X blows up on TikTok, so everybody want to try to do it, but everybody can't do it because the devil's in the details. We got to know exactly what influencers did he use? What kind of challenges did they do? You know, how long were the videos that they made? You know, there's a lot of details that go into this. You can't just say, hey, somebody blew up on something, I'm going to do it too. But you don't know exactly how they do it. You just know where they did it. And that's not enough. You know what I'm saying?
I think a lot of it is people are trying to learn about the whole situation, but you know, you still gotta figure out how how to invest in what you're doing, how to, you know, get yourself in the right place. I think a lot of artists haven't really figured that out yet, to bring more views to themselves, to do some of those ads and banner placements and different places like that. I've done it on other people's, you know, music sites and stuff like that, magazine sites. But you're still fighting certain algorithms and things like that. So We need a kind of a cleaner system, more streamlined system for people to be able to do certain things. And they definitely are going to have to network and try to, you know, figure some different avenues out.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think too many up-and-coming artists frown on the fact of paying to open up on a major tour? As so many people I see, like, when you tell them, like, yo, we could get you on, like, a show at, what is it, South Padre, Texas, I think it is.
South by Southwest?
No, I think it's South Padre, Texas, like down, like towards the beach or whatnot. And there's like 8,000 college kids right there on the beach watching the show. And they always, you know, there's too many artists, though, be like, well, I'm supposed to get paid to perform. But my problem with that is if you don't got a specific amount of fans that will buy a ticket to come through the door, then fuck that. You're not supposed to get paid to perform. Are we in agreement on that?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, if you can't bring, you know, and that's the thing too. I promoted shows with, you know, with other artists and stuff like that, in state, out of state, and had people sell tickets, and they kind of, you know, certain people now balk at selling tickets. Like,
yeah,
you should be able to at least bring 5 to 10 people. You know what I'm saying? Paying customers to a show, at least if there's a certain amount, you know, of people on the bill. Like if it's just, you know, say there's 10 to a dozen artists and y'all bring, you know, 5 to 10 people each or whatever, y'all should be able to bring that amount to a show like that. And they're expecting, you know, you to foot the bill for everything. You know, oh, you've got to, you know, promote the show, you got to do this, do that. Yeah, I'm promoting the show, but you should too. You should also. I'm already having to pay for the venue. I'm already having to pay for radio time. I'm already having to pay, you know, to get security if I need to, if it's not included with the venue. You know what I'm saying? If I'm going to do all that, and then you're going to just show up, or maybe not show up, or try to show up with 20 people, and they're not paying for any drinks, they're not doing anything, they just show up there, they don't support the other artists, and then they walk out after you get done. I could have got somebody else to do that. I could have invested more money in a bigger name that would have put butts in seats. So,
and let me tag off of what you were saying too about the ticket sales. If you're booking the show and you tell the artist to sell some tickets and they can't even sell 10, 20 tickets, why the hell would they think that they're going to sell tickets based off of their name alone? That's some horse shit. That's some delusional thinking. That's bullshit. You ain't selling jack shit off of your name alone if you can't even physically sell 20, 30 tickets hand to hand.
Yeah.
You know, because if you got 100 people that buy a ticket just based off of your name, then you should be able to call 30 people up and say, yo, I got tickets for the show. I'm performing. Bam. Come buy one. But they can't, man, because like most artists, they don't know how to build fan base. They're always trying to get to a record label and let the record label do all the work if they can't. There's too many artists that think like everybody else should do everything for you. You know what I'm saying? That they don't have to do nothing but get in the studio, record, and get paid to perform.
Exactly. And there's too many, it's so many people who think they're superstars already. You got to put the work in. You got to be able to go out here. And the biggest thing I keep saying every time I interview with somebody, you know, different podcasts, different radio shows, when they ask me about, you know, what's the biggest thing I would tell any other artist is network. You know what I'm saying? If you're not networking, if you're not collaborating, you're not creating, you know, different lanes or growing your audience past wherever you're at. So, I mean, it's a lot of people I should be a superstar right now. I should already be paying, you know, get paid for X amount of dollars for this, that, and the other. Well, that's not how this thing works. If it was, we'd all be millionaires right now. You know what I mean?
So Chuck T ain't messaged you yet. We about to be 20 minutes in, man. And I don't want to hold off too long from the topics. We are, I mean, even though we're getting into some things off the freestyle tip. I wish UG would call me right now so I could just put it on speaker and try to set up the interview like right now. DBA is Christ like to follow. No, Mr. J. Trillanoise text me. Yeah, we on. Yeah, Trill, we on here. Still waiting on Chuck T. So we don't forget we got music reviews tomorrow, 5 p.m. We got a comment just come in. Let's see what we got. Yo, B Dot, what's good? So Chuck ain't hit you back yet.
What's going on right here?
I know he was doing live music reviews earlier.
Yeah, he's
today.
Gonna log in right now.
All
right.
Yeah. Chuck don't be playing. Like, it's either he'd be like, yo, if it's hot, yo, hit that hard. If it's trash, throw it in the trash bin. I like, that's the thing. I don't like to trash nobody's music when I'm reviewing it. Even if you could tell if I don't like it, if I fade it out fast like that, I mean, that's pretty much me saying it's trash anyways. You know what I'm saying? When I fade it out that fast, but I don't sit there and be like, yeah, it's trash, it's garbage. I just try to, yo, dog, is this?
Not it. You need working. To go back to the.
Yeah.
Go back to the lab.
You got some things to work on.
I mean, the whole thing is, you know, you don't want to break anybody's spirit. If they have some talent, you don't want to break the spirit. If they don't, we want to let you know. Hey, you know, maybe you could figure something else out. Maybe production is better for you. Maybe kind of writing for somebody might be better for you. But you know.
Well, let me throw this out. I mean, I started rapping when I was 14. The first time I rapped, you know, my homeboy Johnny and James made me and Jacob Shippers battle each other. Like, Jacob was a little pretty up boy white dude, and he ain't never rapped a day in his life. I ain't rapped a day in my life, but I knew hip-hop, you know what I'm saying? And they said I won the battle. That could have been biased because I was their boy and whatnot. But, man, all that early stuff that we thought, me and James, that we thought we was over there killing it, we was off beat. We would just write it and rhyme it. We wouldn't write to like bar. We didn't know about bars, syllables. I'll be honest with you, man. James, 50 years old. I don't even know if he still know how to write the bars. I don't know if he know anything about syllables or bars to this day, man. Cause we just wrote it and rapped it. And we would rap over all the instrumentals. The way our DJ did it is up. Oh, we got Chuck T coming in. All right, so we about to get into this interview. We've been waiting on the Carolina King himself, and he's pulled up right now. The one and only DJ Chuck T.
Yo.
What's up, man?
Man, I apologize for my lateness, man. I had to make sure I had everything peaceful and quiet and the kids taken care of and the business taken care of before I hopped in, man.
Yeah, I saw you earlier, man. You always doing the music reviews, man.
Yeah, because there's just so many artists who put out so much, so much trash music, you know, and a lot of it is because they don't have the proper guidance. They don't have the proper, direction. They have people in their corner like their mom, their dad, their cousins, their homies, and all these people are telling them what music to put out, but they fail to realize you need a professional opinion because you are in a profession. Like, when you get into the music business, you become an entrepreneur. You know what I'm saying? Like, nobody, if I'm a doctor, I don't go to a nurse to get an opinion or to get advice. If I am a nurse, I don't go to a construction worker to get opinions or an advice. You know what I'm saying? But in the music business, people will get opinions and advice from people who have absolutely zero experience in the business. And then whenever things go left, you know, they start pointing the fingers at everybody. You know what I'm saying? And the one person, I made a post last week. I said, the one person, at least here in the Carolinas, who gets blamed for everything is the DJ. The DJ gets blamed for everything here.
Yeah, we were just talking about that. Like, we just started doing music reviews on Saturdays, and I was like, I don't really try to trash them, but if I fade it out quick, that's pretty much saying that it was trash.
Gotcha.
And whatnot. And that's the problem. These artists got the yes men around them. All their homeboys always like, yo, it's a hit. And then the next one they record, yeah, it's a hit. And it's a hit. And none of them are hits.
You know, I tell some artists whenever I'm doing my music reviews, like, you know, when's the last time you've been to a club? All right? Because nothing that you're giving me right now sounds like anything that we pay in the club after 12 midnight. You know what I'm saying? And then when's the last time you actually took a day to listen to the radio? You know, nothing you give me, you have given me, sounds like anything that's played on the radio. Then when is the last time you went on TikTok and looked at the trending audio? All right, nothing that you've given me sounds like the trending audio on TikTok. So if I can't break your record in the clubs, if I can't break your records, and I'm not just talking about regular clubs, I'm talking about strip clubs as well, because those are two totally different types of vibes. Yeah, so if I can't break your stuff in the regular clubs, I can't break it in the strip clubs, I can't help you go viral, whether we pay for, you know, the placements to go viral, or we hit up influencers, or I try to get other DJs to repost your music, trying to get it to go viral. And if I can't break it in mix show on the radio, what exactly do you want me to do with it, bro? If I can't help you in none of my avenues, what do you want me to do?
That's crazy.
Well, here's a question for you, because we break certain things down in terms of commercial viability, but then you have other lanes for maybe, say, more lyrical artists.
Like,
how do you?
He said, like who?
Let's just say, like, the style would be like a Royce 5'9" or something like that. How do you get them placed somewhere? How would you?
So as a DJ, it's hard for me to even work with those types of artists because there's very little that I can personally do. Now what I will say is J. Cole just did, or somebody was recording J. Cole. I think it was one of Conway the Machine's people, one of the Griselda people, but it's a post that, has been circulating, and I posted to my page, and it was J. Cole having a conversation with Conway the Machine, candid conversation. And he was saying, when he first got signed, he went into the studio and he wanted to make one of the sonically best albums that he could possibly make, one of the best lyrical albums he could make. And he didn't care if it was slept on. He just wanted the bars. He wanted the vibe. And he wanted his delivery. He wanted his subject matters and his topics to be up here. And he said he didn't care about the sales, because he felt like everybody's first album is always slept on. You know, the first album is the one where you're sort of painting a picture of who you are and you're giving people, you know, an insight into who you are. And he gave the album to Jay-Z. And Jay-Z said, yeah, no, we're not putting this out. You need some hits on this album. I'm not putting this album out until you give me some hits. And he said it took him a year and a half to come up with the formula, to come up with the sound, to come up with the subject matters that it would take in order for him to make hits. And he said, when Jay finally heard it, he said, okay, we got two or three records on this album that we can make hits, that we can turn into hits, that we can take the radio, we can take to the DJs, and now we can put your album out. And he said, at first, it took him a year and a half to get that formula straight, a year and a half of just studying and trying to figure out what's the biology, what's the psychology behind a hit record. Took him a year and a half. This is J. Cole. Took him a year and a half to figure that out. And then Jay-Z put it out, and he says now he knows exactly what to do. When he goes in the studio and he's working on an album, he knows exactly what to do to make a hit. He's telling Conway the Machine, that's what you got to do, bro. People will love you lyrically. You can be a Royce 5'9". You can be one of those types of artists, But just know, you'll never get to a certain pinnacle. You will always be a step above a local rapper. You know, and most artists don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear that. So, you know, when I deal with the more so lyrical artists, I always tell them, you have to get it in your head. I may not ever reach mainstream success. But what I also tell them is, Currency makes a shitload of money. Big Crit makes a shitload of money. Denzel Curry makes a shitload of money. All right. What's the other guy everybody has been going crazy over? Like, even Joyner Lucas.
I love Joyner. I love Joyner. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they do it independently. They do it under the radar. You know, people know their name. And even Nipsey, literally, like maybe up until about a year before he passed away, he was also one of those artists, even though he was signed to a major label. He was also one of those artists who just had a real core cult following. He didn't really make any club records. He didn't make anything that was super commercial. He didn't go to radio. He didn't go to clubs. He wasn't with the TikTok and the Instagram type stuff. But he still sold out venues of 2,500 people or less. You know what I'm saying? Between 2,000 and 4,000 people. You got to be happy with that. And if you can live with that, then there's a totally different formula we got to take. We got to hit the college campuses. We got to get you in front of open mic crowds. We got to get you in front of the backpack crowds. Like, you're more of a performance artist. And that's the formula that we're probably going to end up taking with Loot. I've reached out to a few people close to Loot. I may start working with him. I may not. But, you know, it's something that I have the desire to do because I love his music. But I feel like he gets caught up in, you know, not being commercial or not having commercial success. And that's why his output as far as dropping music isn't that good, because I feel like he wants his music to be up there. Yeah. But you don't make music that's for up there. You make music that's for down here, but being down here isn't bad, you know?
Yeah, you're right. I got a question for you. How did you start making a name for yourself, man?
So when I first came into the music business, I was an artist. I was a rapper.
Okay.
Yeah, so I started off rapping, and I got to a point in my career. This is about 99, 2000. I got to a point in my career where I just got tired of lying on records. You know, rappers these days, they don't mind lying on records. Do you know what I'm saying? They don't mind lying on records. They don't mind making up the biggest fables ever. You know, they're Charles Manson. You know, you know, they're Pablo Escobar on records. But I was a little different. You know, I got a conscience, and you know, everybody talks that real nigga shit. And I just felt like if I was a real nigga, I got to keep it 100. Like, that's not what I was doing. You know, like, yeah, I was selling a little pound of Reggie here, 2 or 3 pounds of Reggie there. But on the records, I was moving boatloads of cocaine. You know what I'm saying? Like, look, I was smashing some of the baddest hood rats. But on the records, I was smashing the baddest video models. You know what I'm saying? So I backed away and I tried my hand at a lot of different things in the music industry. I did production. I managed the studio. I did artist management. I ran a label. I did promotion. I did a lot of different things until I finally got a job working at a local radio station back home. But it wasn't on the music side. It was in the sales side. And from there, I sort of parlayed that into the music side, because I had done so much as far as production and rapping and all that other stuff. You know, I started helping out with the commercials because the production staff was getting sort of backed up with the commercials. So I started cutting commercials for the ads that I had. And then naturally the GM heard my voice. He said, man, whose voice is that on these commercials? Like, he sounds good. And they said, oh, that's the guy in sales. That's the sales rep. So that's when I sort of moved into production. From production, I started doing a little bit of on-air work as a personality. And I fell in love with DJing because I realized that the people who actually had the ability to control the playlists of a radio station, a little bit, they could change the playlist a little bit, were the mixers, the people who actually came in and mixed and blended. They had the power to break records. So I bought a little turntable a Gemini battle pack with some belt-driven turntables. Taught myself how to DJ, started doing little parties around the city, but what really blew me up were mixtapes. So I realized that in places like New York, even in Atlanta, and out west in LA, artists were broken through the mixtape circuit. They weren't really broken in clubs. They weren't really broken on the radio. The mixtapes is where new artists were introduced to the game. The Brucey B's, the Kid Capri's, the Cutmaster C's, the K-Say, the Clue, you know. And I started studying that formula. And I started doing the same thing here in the Carolinas. And that blew me up because nobody else was doing mixtapes. So it was a lane that nobody was in. But it was also a very difficult lane because I had to educate people on what mixtapes were, you know what I'm saying, and how they worked. You know, being home in South Carolina, in Charleston, South Carolina at that, we were so far removed from the quote-unquote industry that nobody understood it. But I just took the same formula that I took from being an artist and applied it to being a DJ, promoting myself, passing out flyers, putting up posters. You know what I'm saying? Making sure I was in the clubs, making sure I was amongst the people. I was at every event. I was at every festival. I was at every open mic. And you know, shit, I would work my day job. And then the minute I get off work, I go home, I press up some CDs on my little CD burner, and I would be in the clubs. You know, and I would sell CDs. I would sell mixtapes. Like I said, I would do all the car shows. I would go to the flea market. Like, I was everywhere, bro. I became popular by being everywhere.
Damn. Let me ask you this, man. You know, because I've done music promo for well over a decade.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we dealt with, like, record pools for years. And COVID definitely, I felt like, messed up the record pool game. It really did. But a question I really have is, do you feel like a lot of DJs had trouble creating value in this digital world?
Yes. And a lot of it is because we're not really educated, or the younger DJs aren't really educated on just how to rock a party, how to break records, just the overall psychology of DJing and how you're supposed to control the crowd, not let the crowd control you.
Yeah.
So eventually what happens is you become no different than, somebody putting a playlist or from Apple Music, Rap Life, or putting the Rap Caviar playlist from Spotify on their phone and hitting play and walking away.
Yeah.
You know, DJs don't understand that you are a host as well. You're supposed to have a voice. There's too many DJs that go to the club and just play music.
Yeah, we've been talking about that.
They don't crowd up. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? They don't talk shit on the mic. You know, and then the promoters or the club owners, they got to hire a host separately. So now I got to pay two people. I got to hire a host and I got to hire a DJ.
And the DJ is supposed to pretty much host the whole event too. That's originally what DJs were doing, hosting events and stuff.
Exactly. Well, you're supposed to be able to cut a little bit, and you don't got to be Q-Bert. You don't got to be DJ scientist, but you know you need to be able to cut. You need to be able to bring some records back. You got to be able to add some spice to the music. So when DJs stopped doing that, then you became no different than a playlist. So now I can just go on YouTube and hit play on a playlist that a real DJ made, right? I can find whatever DJ made, you know, because I upload a lot of my mixes to YouTube. And I look at my views and I look at the comments and I see people saying like, bro, I just let this play all night in the club. I'm like, damn, I took somebody's job.
Wow.
You know, but you have to be able to adapt and adjust. And it, just like how AI is taking over every industry, you know, it's the same with us. We got to be prepared to add something to the game that a computer or a playlist can't.
Speaking I got of, one more. Oh, go ahead, Miss J.
Speaking of taking over, what are your feelings on the radio situation? I see a lot of people kind of losing.
Got fired.
Spots. Yeah, basically.
Yeah, it happens. Yeah, so it happens. It's corporate America, man. It's literally corporate America. You have to be prepared to lose your job anytime you have a job in corporate America. That's just the gist of it. I just feel like because this happens so often in radio, whether it be the labels or whether it be radio, a lot of radio personalities and mixers should be prepared to have their own path. But the radio does a good job of stifling people from creating their own path. I remember back in the day, the radio station told Charlamagne Tha God the minute he got bigger than the radio station, they were going to fire him. So don't get bigger than the radio station. And that's handled in the Bible. Me and him were chilling together. And he basically was like, damn, the station, this was when he was on the radio in Columbia. He said, they basically told me, if I get bigger than the station, I'm gone.
That's crazy. I mean, it would be more beneficial for them to help grow a personality so you have these different avenues and lanes and keep the stations open, because you're exactly. Starting to see a lot of basically stations have prepackaged shows. They don't have, they had 6 to 8 personalities. Now they got maybe 3 to 4 and three different syndicated shows.
Yeah, syndication. They started to syndicate. So you'll wake up in the morning, you'll be in Fayetteville, but then you'll be listening to The Breakfast Club. We all know that's in New York. You know what I'm saying? Or you'll be listening to Ebro in the morning, you know, or you'll be listening to all these different, Ricky Smiley. You know, nowadays things aren't local. These radio station conglomerates would rather pay one personality in their team, you know, $500,000 a year than pay 40 different radio station teams, you know what I'm saying, on a local level, $100,000 a year. Monetarily, it doesn't make sense, you know what I'm saying? But a lot of times these local radio shows, it's the same thing. They stopped adding value. They stopped being out in the community. They didn't make themselves valuable. You have to make yourself irreplaceable.
You're right. I don't see a lot of that no more, them out in the community like they used to be back in the days. And Mutate God commented, he said, what up, fellas? What up, Chuck?
Oh, yeah. That's the homie Weed Straw. What up, Weed Straw?
Yeah. I got another question. We had a question last week, and maybe you can answer this.
Okay.
Why do you think DJs left the group identity of hip-hop? I mean, you used to have Pete Rock, CL Smooth, Kool G Rap, DJ Polo, Showbiz AG, DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince, and the DJs, Eric B and Rakim, and the DJ's name used to come first a lot of times. And now it's like they're not part of the group identities no more. What do you think that's about, man? Why is that?
I had a long conversation with somebody about this probably about a month ago, because they told me, oh, it's the DJ's job to break artists and to break records. And I told them that's not that. Unfortunately, whenever y'all got the big head, y'all meaning artists, and y'all stopped valuing having the DJ as part of the group, you know, a lot of that sort of went out the window. Y'all left the DJs to have to fend for themselves. So the DJ's best friend was no longer the artist. The DJ's best friend became the radio station owner and the club promoter or the club owner. So now when we go into places, our job is not to break records. Our job is not to introduce new artists and new music. When I'm in a club, the only thing the club owner and the promoters care about is me keeping asses moving. You know what I'm saying? Keeping people dancing, keeping people vibing. And what does a new record do? It stops people from vibing. It stops people from dancing. Yeah. I have no incentive to take a chance on a lot of people's records. Same thing with the radio station. Now, if I'm a DJ and I depend on the radio station for my paycheck, the job of the DJ now becomes to keep people from changing the channel.
Yep.
All right? And what does a new record do? A lot of times it makes people change the channel. So now I'm going to play it safe. I'm going to play the records that have already been broken by other people. I'm going to play the records that the radio stations have mandated for me to play. And I'm going to play the records from the radio, from the record labels and from the independent artists that put money in my hand because I know I'm risking my job every time I play your record. So now it's no longer about so much as the art form or breaking records. It becomes a money game. And that started with the artist. It became a money game. What is the actual job of a DJ? Oh, well, I can just go to whoever and get them to hit play on the CD player and I'll rap my songs. Or I'll get whoever to put my song. I'll get the producer to make me a show mix. And now I don't need a DJ. Now I get to keep all the money. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. I always think part of the problem is, like, when I first got into radio, this guy, you know, he was saying, we were doing nothing but independent artists, unsigned artists. And he was like, man, these damn artists, they don't do their job. They don't bring listeners. And I'm like, well, it's your radio station. You're supposed to bring listeners. He's like, nah, I got to school you. It's the artist's job to bring listeners. And I think artists don't know that that's their job. Like, just like if I book them for a show, it's their job to have enough fans to where I can bring enough people through the door. It's not just the show promoter's responsibility. Yeah, they got to advertise, but you got to be an artist that's big enough for me to put seats, you know, fill the seats and stuff too.
Yeah, and that's one thing, you know, when you look at back in the day, you know, because I'm from the Master P era. I'm from the J Prince era. I'm from the Tony Draper and Suave House era. You know what I'm saying? And in that era, as artists, we went out and we connected with the people, all right? We connected with the people. We pulled up in the middle of the hood, all right? We stapled posters to light poles, all right? We went and we gave out flyers hand to hand. We went to the clubs. We put flyers on all the cars. We went to the DJ in the club. We bought him a drink. We may have slid him a 20. Here, play my record. You know what I'm saying? We did the groundwork that was necessary. All right, we went to the radio stations. How much for an interview? How much for the, we didn't mind paying for that type of stuff. You know, we knew we needed to create fans. If we had to pay to open up, we paid to open up. You know, we did what was necessary to create fans. All right. Artists nowadays want you to create the fans for them. They want you to bring the crowd for them. I just had a conversation with a group of artists who said they were tired of doing open mics. And I told them, you will always have to pay to perform until you actually can put asses in seats. And they made every excuse. They pointed the finger at everybody else other than themselves as to why they couldn't put butts in seats. Oh, well, the DJ don't want to play our music. Oh, the promoters don't want to... you know, pay us to come to the club. Why should I bring all these people and we still got to pay to get in? The radio don't want to support us. You know, the playlisters, they charging like crazy. The blogs are charging like crazy. The drop mic platforms are charging like crazy. Everything was somebody else's fault. You know what I'm saying? They never said, Chuck, what do I have to do? Or what do you think we should do as artists to be able to create fans so that we can add value? You have to be able to add value to all these different people that you want to help you. And you know what I tell them? If you want to stop paying, all right, if you want to stop paying all these people, make a hit record. You know what's a hit record? Not a record that sounds good. A hit record is a record that people demand. So go to these high schools. Go to these colleges. Go to these military bases, especially here in the Carolinas. See what you got to do to be able to get in there and perform or pass out flyers or speak to the kids. Build that name awareness. Build that brand awareness. You know what I'm saying? Pass out them QR code flyers. Run those ads on social media. Run those ads on the radio. Get people, you know, tell all your friends, hey, man, call up to the radio station, request my shit. Or, hey, I got a show. It's just an open mic, but I need all y'all to come fuck with me. You know what I'm saying? If you love me, fuck with me. Get all those people to share your shit, like your shit. Start with the people. Start on the ground. Start with the boots on the ground. Connect with the potential fans. And then from there, if I'm a DJ and I spin your record and I see 50 people in the club going crazy, Of course you're not going to have to pay me to play that record.
Yeah, yeah.
That record moves the crowd. You know what I'm saying? Same thing with a promoter. If you, if a promoter books you to do a show, he says, I give you a free booth and a bottle. I give you a booth and a bottle. And you walk in there with 30 people, 10 of y'all get in free, the other 20 pay, I guarantee you he's going to make sure that every time a major artist comes, he going to book you because he knows you're going to bring a paying crowd.
Yeah. Jay, did you have another question? Because I got another one too. Do you think like just putting an artist on a major artist tour and having them open up is still like one of the best ways to just break artists nowadays?
Nah, it's not one of the best ways. It's not one of the best ways because nobody's coming to see you, Otis, as they say.
Okay. Okay.
Nobody's coming to see you, Otis.
That's funny. Yeah, that's funny. I just chopped up a clip for Melvin Riley where he had me do something at the beginning where I guess they're out there touring without him. And he's like, he had me clip it up like, ain't nobody come to see you, Otis, because he ain't, you know, on the show and whatnot.
Yeah, but, you know, it's still a great way, though. Don't get me wrong. It's still a great way, but it's not the best way. All right, the best way is to have boots on the ground. When I talk to artists, and I
street teaming it.
Huh?
Street teaming it.
Street teaming it. Yeah, take it back to the old school.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when look, I tell people all the time, in North Carolina and in South Carolina, we have the highest concentration of HBCUs. Go to them colleges, boy. Go to them colleges. Get you 10,000 flyers with the QR code on them. Get you 1,000 stickers. Go to every last single college campus and, man, pass those flyers out. Put them stickers all around campus with your QR code on it. Eventually, people are going to see it enough the way they're going to whip out their phone and be like, you know what? Let me see what the fuck is up. I mean, anything in this game is hypnotism. Yeah. That's what people don't understand. This game is hypnotism. It's the same thing with radio. When you play a song on the radio one or two times, nobody cares. Or they may even hate the song. You play it enough, now they love the song.
Yeah.
Same thing with the clubs. If I play a song in the club one time, nobody cares. Two times, nobody cares. They may even hate the song, be like, bro, what is this whack ass shit you playing? I play it enough, they're gonna like it.
Do you think the COVID lockdowns and all that deterred a lot of people away from the street teaming? Where you didn't do it, where you didn't do it for a while, and now like people forget, like, you know, you like it was like
no,
I was telling,
they weren't really doing it before COVID. They had already gotten lazy.
Okay.
They had already started depending on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter to do shit. And I'm sitting here like, bro, these social media companies are literally just baiting you in. And once they bait you in and you bring all of your friends and family members and fans to their platform, now the algorithm keeps a million people who say they want to see you from seeing your shit.
Only
5% of your people are going to see it. But you brought them your whole entire family, friends, you know, fans, your whole entire network, and now they're able to run other people's ads in front of your fan base.
And TikTok was the only one that I seen that when I first started messing with TikTok that really started pushing, you know, people's content a little further. When you get into Instagram and Facebook and all these other platforms, they're not pushing it one bit.
Oh, no, not at all. Look, I'll go live on TikTok, and in an hour, it'll say, you know, I've had 1,900 viewers. You know, the average view time is 10 to 15 minutes, maybe even longer. These are who your top viewers were. This was the top time people, you know, viewed your live. I'll go right and look, I only have 4,000 followers on TikTok, but I get 1,000 people who watch my live every time I go live. On Instagram, I have almost 70,000 followers, and I maybe have 150 people who watch my live, and I'm on for an hour.
So yeah, we always talk about that. Like most of our viewers right now, they come from Twitter. But the thing is Twitter, they can't comment through our StreamYard.
Got
but then our Facebook, like, it's like we get a
people max.
Yeah, yeah, it's like, wow. And Facebook is where most of your real friends are supposed to be at, and the people that really, really know you. And I think it really says a lot and tells you a lot about the people that really, really know you, what they think about really supporting, you know.
It's not that. It's the algorithm. They don't even know you're on.
Yeah.
It's the algorithm. They don't even know you're on.
And they want you to pay out. And they really want you to pay out.
Boom. And that's what it is. They want you to run ads.
Yeah,
you put $300 worth of ads on this live right now, you know, and you're gonna see them numbers shoot up. Yeah. But damn, I gotta pay for people to see me who clicked on the ad friend button purposely so they could see me.
Yeah.
So that's why I said it was the greatest hoax. They brought all of us on here, and in the beginning, people used to be able to see your shit. They brought us all over to the app. We brought all of our friends, all of our family, all of our friends, all of our students, all of our coworkers. We brought everybody over to these apps, and then they ramped us down so nobody could see our shit, just so that they could put in front of our people the people who are paying for ads.
Man, it's crazy. Have you ever run an ad on the live?
I haven't done it in a while because I do it on TikTok more than anything. So if I put $50 on a live on TikTok, boom. Now I'm looking at 300, 400 people watching my live at one time. And because
what do you got to schedule it to start right when you go live? You got to schedule it to start right when you go live?
I typically do it right when I start because TikTok pushes that now. When I go live, TikTok will run something across my screen that says promote this live, and for $50. You can gain anywhere from, you know, 400 to 500 extra viewers. Yeah. So TikTok pushes that. So, you know, if I see that and I know I'm doing a music review where people are paying me $15 to skip the line to listen to their music, psychologically and mathematically, I'm like, damn, if I get 400 people watching the live at one time, at least 50 of them are going to pay that $15. So I done came up. Damn near, you know what I'm saying, $600 by spending $50.
Yeah.
So it all mathematically adds up. But Facebook and Instagram and them, they don't give a fuck about none of that. They don't want nobody to see your shit.
Not unless you're spending some big dollars.
You got to spend big dollars, bro. You got to spend big dollars. So I tell every business owner, the key is now to go old school. Get your text blast and email blast. So when you see a lot of these ads on social media, when you click on the ad, what's the first thing you see when you go to that website? Put your email in, put your phone number in, and we're going to give you 15% off your order. They're trying to get you off of the platform because they know the platform going to charge them every time they want to see you in front. They want that ad in front of them. But if I have direct access to you, now when I'm running a sale, I can hit you up directly. Now if I see that you haven't purchased in a while, I can hit you up directly. And that's what artists and producers need to be doing. Don't depend on Instagram. Start your own community. You know what I'm saying? Get you a text blast service. Get you an email blast service. Say, hey, I got an exclusive track nobody has heard. Text Little Trap Shorty to 843 blah 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 blah.
Big Kaz asked the question, what's the text blast app to use? SMS something that I use.
So I use Preneur. It's like Entrepreneur, but without the it's Preneur. It's a black owned app. It's like a link tree on steroids. So not only does it let me text blast, but I can sell tickets to my event, so it's Eventbrite. All of my links to whatever I want, Spotify, YouTube, events, all that is right there. So it's like a link tree on steroids. I can have events. People can book me. People can contact me directly through it. It's an amazing app. It's a powerful app.
I've actually never heard of that one. I'm going to have to check that
out. Yeah, it's brand new.
I use SMS something through my BigCommerce. And of course, like email marketing, I got like a couple MailChimp accounts because I had Indycastle Radio before, and then I got Promo Palace for like my customers. And that's a lot of things. I think a lot of people don't really focus on building their database up they don't know who their real fans are, their real customers and clients are at all.
They don't take advantage of no analytics, none.
Yeah, unfortunately. None. We got a couple of topics still to get in. So before you go, anything you want to shout out?
Man, look, make sure you tune in to the Reverb Music Review every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 3 p.m. and 6 p.m. on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. Also, I still do showcases. My showcases go crazy. Then follow me on all platforms at DJ Chuck T. That's Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok, and Twitter. I do one-on-one consultations, and I can help you sort of get your music shit together. And I teach a music business class called The Foundation of Music. It is one of the most comprehensive music business courses you will ever take. It's an in-person course. I don't do a lot of that webinars and virtual stuff, just for the simple fact that none of the executives are taking virtual courses and webinars. They going and sitting in classrooms, and that's how they keep, you know, all of the oh, I can just go on YouTube and learn people fucked up. You know what I'm saying? my music business course is located here in Charlotte, North Carolina. It's a 3-day course. My next course is May 20th, 21st, and 22nd, and it's totally free. All you got to do is pay for your course workbook. That's $55. You get to take the course. I teach you about trademarks, copyrights, PROs, registering your music, split sheets, publishing. I teach you about business setup and business formation. The list goes on and on and on and on and on. Nothing but great reviews. And you can hit the link in my bio on any of my pages and sign up. Also, I'm revamping my playlist as we speak. So, you know, my mixtapes were Down South Slanging mixtapes. I sold millions of those. And now I've turned it into a playlist on Apple Music, Spotify, entitled I'm updating it this weekend. I haven't updated it in probably about a month. I just wasn't enthusiastic about the music. But I know so many artists need help. And I've been contacted by so many former label reps who lost their jobs in February, who are like, Chuck, I'm working with these amazing artists. You know, I need you to fuck with me. I need you to help me push them. So my playlist was doing numbers. So I'm updating the playlist this weekend, and I have slots for independent artists. Look, I still am in the streets. I still DJ. Tomorrow, Saturday, I'll be DJing at the R&B Vibes Festival here in Charlotte, North Carolina. It's one of the biggest, like literally the biggest outdoor R&B concerts and festivals. Right now, I think they have maybe 2,500 tickets sold. So they're estimating 5,000 people will be out there. And then I'm doing Apple Chill still out there in Fayetteville at the Fayetteville Drag Strip. That's June 15th. I'm doing the Freaknik 2024. That's that's May 31st. And then I'm doing the Myrtle Beach Bike Week Car and Bike Show. That's May 24th from Myrtle Beach. So I'm still active. I'm still out here getting it in, man.
That's what's up.
Can you give them one more time? Give them that black-owned...
It's called Preneur. It's like entrepreneur, but without the entre in front. So it's Preneur. And okay. You can hit the link in my bio on my page, and you can see how my page is set up. I got my merch for sale. You can sign up for my music business class. I got links to all my interviews. And you can just see how it's set up, and you're gonna be like, wow, this shit is amazing. I need the same thing. You do it all through the app, and then I have a text blast, and the text blast is so powerful. When you sign up and put your name in it, I can send out a text blast, and it personally puts your name in all of the text messages, everybody's name in the text message. And then I can break my list down in the zip code where I can target people from certain zip codes or for certain states. So if I'm an artist and I'm doing a show, or if I'm DJing and I'm doing a show in your zip code, I can tailor it to where it only emails the people in that zip code or the surrounding areas.
Damn.
Good stuff. Yeah,
bro. Yeah, it's powerful.
Yo, we glad when you came on. This is the most informative interview we've had so far, man.
Man, thank you. I mean, and that's what I aim to do, add value, man. You know, At the end of the day, everybody want the show to add value to them. No, how do you add value to the show?
Nah, you definitely brought a lot of credibility to our show tonight, man.
Look, anytime. That's what it's all about. Each one teach one, each one reach one. You know what I'm saying? It don't matter if we got 10 people watching, 5 people watching, 30 people watching. You know, I need all that. You know, I need it all. I need it all. One, I tell artists, one fan at a time. Y'all want to try to blow up way too quick? One fan at a time. If you can get 2 or 3 fans every day, 2 or 3 people to listen to your music every day, by the end of the month, all right, by the end of the month, you have 100 monthly listeners. All right, boom, 3 people a day. Now, let's take that 100 monthly listeners and let's multiply that in a year. If I stick to my 3 people a day every year, all right, that's 1,200 people. So, you know, at the end of the day, 1,200 monthly listeners, it may not sound like a lot, but if they eating off of, I mean, anything you drop, listen, if anything you drop, they go eat up, they go listen to it, they watching the videos, you know, they buying the merch, they liking it, they sharing it. Bro, you can eat off of that.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen artists eat off like 10,000 artists and they don't even tour. They just sell physical copies, digital downloads. I mean, don't even tour at all.
Exactly. You know, and if I'm not mistaken, Spotify released a study not too long ago that talked about how super fans, all right, super fans. Yeah. Super fans are classified as the fans who not just stream your music, but they'll buy a ticket to your show and they'll buy merch. All right, that's a super fan. They're saying that super fans. I'm sorry, somebody tried to call in. They're saying that the majority of listeners are not super fans.
Yeah.
But if an artist can create or can obtain at least 20% of their monthly listeners as super fans, or I'm sorry, if they can turn 20% of their monthly listeners into super fans, those super fans can generate 5 times as much money. Just that 20% or that 15% can generate 5 times the amount of income as your whole entire monthly listeners combined. So if you can take, if you got 1,000 monthly listeners, if you got 2,000 monthly listeners, I will use 2,000. You got 2,000 monthly listeners, and all of them are literally just monthly listeners. You're not making no money. But if you can take 20% of that, which is what, 400 people, if I can take 400 people and I can turn them into super fans, now I'm gonna make 5 times the amount of money that I did make. Because you gotta think, streams are just pennies. They're fractions of a penny. Streams are fractions of a penny. So if I get one person to buy a hoodie, you know, as if we're not even gonna do a hoodie. If I get one person to buy a $25 t-shirt that I put $5 or $6 into, boom, look at the profit on that. Now, what is that? That's a $14 profit. What's 14 times 400? Boom, now you're making money.
Well, if you get...
Now, let's just say I
you get all 400 to buy a shirt, that's 10,000.
And I take that limited edition CD and I sell it for 10 bucks, all right? I put like maybe $1.50 into it. That's an $8.50 profit. Multiply that times 400. So artists nowadays need to be focused on really, really building a relationship, a personal relationship with their audience so that they can turn as many people into super fans as possible. Get as many of your monthly listeners to actually like you, listen to you, interact with you, buy into who you are so that they can spend real money with you.
Yeah, that's some definitely great information. We're going to get a lot of good clips out of this interview, man. You can't hear me? Jay, you can't hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, he said he can't hear us.
Uh-oh.
I think he lost the audio here.
The phone can hear you. Lock you offline. Yeah, we can hear you.
We can hear you.
Phone call must knock you offline. Yeah.
Well, he can't hear us, so we're going to go ahead and let him go.
All right. We'll check back.
All right, so we lost him there. We lost Chuck T there. He said he couldn't hear us. I didn't know if it was my mic or my sound card, but you said you could still hear me, right?
Yeah, yeah, I can see it. His phone call must have knocked him offline or something.
You, yeah. Oh, he just hit us in a private chat. Oh, lost audio. Damn, he. Yeah, he knew that. Most people don't know to use that private chat. That's crazy. Yeah, man, that was very informative. And what he said towards the end about the super fans is, I think a lot of artists, they don't want to get personal with the fans. They don't want to take the time to be personal with the fans. And you got to do that. I've always been saying that. You got to turn these fans into friends.
Exactly. And that's pretty much what they were talking about. We talked about it maybe a few weeks ago about people being mysterious. That's what they were talking about. They have no connection to you as an artist. They just know you showed up, you know, with music and you're trying to, you know, put the music out. But they have no connection to you or to your music. Excuse me. Because they have no connection to you.
Yeah. Yo, and shouts out to Carolina King, Chuck T, man. I'm glad you booked that interview, man. That was the most informative interview as far as, you know, for artists trying to come up, unsigned, independents, just music industry stuff. Because normally we bring on, you know, we're bringing on rappers and stuff like that. Even when we did, like, PF Cuttin', you know, it was just more about what PF Cuttin' did. That's the thing. We didn't even really ask him too much about himself. It was just really a lot of stuff about the industry, man. A lot of things that people needed to really hear.
And we didn't really get to touch on as much as we could have, but, you know.
Nah, we got to have him. We got to have him back.
But yeah, I want to try to get some other people on. Maybe I'll be able to get on one lady, MJ. She does a lot of promotion and stuff like that. Maybe hopefully we'll be able to try to get her on as well to talk about a lot of what's going on and a lot of what artists are missing out on. What should be in, you know, involved in and trying to get together.
You still got time to knock out these topics, right?
Yeah, we can.
All right, let me get to a quick Dizzle break. And don't forget, tomorrow we got Hakeem Green, Saturday, 5 p.m. Eastern time, before the music reviews. Let's get into this Dizzle break with Chip Fu, and we're going to be right back.
Tropical Chip. Me and my team will never be link up. They're gonna be drink up. We sit and relax and have few glasses when there's things to think about. Like I'm nice with the boss when I tend to the bars and I'm not talking drink up. So tell the bartender that's tending the bar to please pass me a big cup up. And tell the waitress is waiting on us to put a little ice in it. Now watch the ice become weightless like the spaceships that I be sitting in. No waiting list, another waiting for that tropical twist that'll kick in your taste buds. Now taste up. Yo, I insist it's the drizzle.
Dizzle is a premium luxury liqueur mixed with agave tequila, cognac, and orange liquor mango mix. Throw your Dizzle on ice, and it's nice. If you want to get your very own bottle or bottles, go to DizzleBrand.com. Shouts out to everybody that's been tuning in and commenting. Big Kaz said, dope show. Appreciate it, man. I definitely love this one. Mutate Guy been tuning in. Jay Swerve tuned in. Mr. Jones tuned in earlier. Christopher Porterfield. I don't know if you know Christopher Porterfield. He be everywhere, dude. And B Dot tuned in earlier as well. All right, let's get into this topic. I didn't put him on the screen. Let's start with the AI. Do we think AI is going to be what was the, you said, does it have any good use in the music industry?
Yeah, does have any good use in the music industry? I think, first of all, we've seen the worst use of it, you know what I'm saying, in the battle with Drake. I think a lot of, you know, that kind of stuff is just, that should be taboo off top. To help recreate albums or help remaster albums, I think it, that the Beatles did with their album, a song they did maybe like almost a year ago now, where they kind of pieced together a lot of old vocals that were kind of dusted up and have been damaged by, you know, time. If you want to do stuff like that as far as creating from that place, I think that that's a very valuable tool for AI to be.
So they used it what? They used it to kind of master the music better?
Yeah, basically remaster, because
remaster, you know, yeah.
So the some of the vocals, you know, have been damaged or you know, kind of lost. So, you know, they were able to kind of create the song or help create the song through using AI.
That, and that's where I was going to go with it, like, because and Chuck T just commented, says someone called and threw me off the auto. Appreciate you guys. We appreciate you, man. Great interview. Yeah. Really great interview. I can't wait to clip up some of these clips. I'm probably going to try to manually clip up so many clips plus the AI. I'm going to use. That's another thing. Like, okay, we'll use AI to clip up the clips. You know?
Yeah, video clips. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good use. But I was going to go the same way with you, like the mastering of the music, because, you know, I was talking to DV Alias Christ one day, and shouts out to him, talk all the time, and he was like saying that he masters his music with the AI. And I was like, oh, you master the music with the AI? Yeah, I was like, damn, okay. Like, yeah, that that makes the job easier. And then if AI has a certain set of, I guess, subsets or can get your mastering down to the T. I mean, because we got to go off the ear all the time, typically, right?
Yeah. You got to rely on basically your equipment, you know, working the way it should, so that you can kind of catch flaws here and there. And the problem becomes, you know, if your equipment is not working well, you know, what do you do then? AI kind of, you know, takes that place of some certain equipment, so you're not so reliant on physical equipment, hardware. You're kind of able to do it easier through software, and cuts down on, you know, the time somewhat.
So we can agree AI has a good use as far as remastering old music that wasn't mastered very well back in the days because of technology not being so advanced, mastering new music. What else, though? Is there any, I mean, audio, clipping up, like, content, but everything else about it seems like a negative, right?
Pretty much. I mean, the thing is, any technology is supposed to be utilitarian, basically. It's a tool. It's never supposed to take the place of something else. It's just supposed to speed things up. And it still has to be some kind of human being involved with it. You know, corporate America, like we talked about earlier, you know, saying wants to replace everything. They don't want to have to pay people. You know what I'm saying? They'd rather pay one individual and have everything. All the people at the top is the one making the money. So we can't allow that to happen in any space. You know, AI, any new technology is just supposed to be a tool to help artists become better at what they're doing, better at their craft, be more self-sufficient. It's never supposed to take the place of actual artists or artistry.
I don't know if you remember when I posted something about if people would just focus on making good to great music, they wouldn't have to be feeling threatened by AI. And it's like, if you keep putting out a lot of average and okay music, I think you almost give the labels like an excuse per se to say, well, you know, y'all ain't putting out a lot of great and good stuff there anyways, we can do better with AI.
Well, I mean, that's across the board, across the entertainment period. If they can recycle, they can recycle, you know, they don't want to pay anymore. But the problem becomes, you know, we have to get the people step up and say, this is not good. This is not meeting the standards of what is set up for the culture. if we don't step up and say that, then, you know, we allow corporate America to kind of dictate what gets played, who gets paid, and who doesn't get paid, and who doesn't get played. So we've got to be more proactive. We spent a lot of time being lazy as artists and other individuals. You know, we need that. We need that. That union, like I talked about. We need that. We need that. You know, either formally or informally, to kind of keep things in line.
But is that ever going to happen? I mean, a union for musicians, and how is that going to work? Like, is there going to be gatekeepers to if you join, you can join the union or not?
I think that
I mean, it's kinda, there's it's always been happening. Gatekeepers that join in unions. Unions are usually limited, right? I mean, I don't know about the actors unions, but like a lot of union, like a lot of work unions, like only so many people can get into the union. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you have to have a certain amount of hours in or a certain amount of this, that, or the other in. Same thing, I believe, for SAG. You have to have so many movies under your belt or whatever.
Yeah, so as a musician, if you're a musician, you ain't getting no paid shows. You hardly getting any streams. You ain't got nothing going on. I mean, are they going to be like, well, you're not really, you can't join the union because you don't meet, you know, the criteria?
I think, you know, just because it's difficult to have happen doesn't mean you shouldn't do it at all. You have to set up what the parameters are. A lot of times, you know, you're gonna have people say, you know, this person can't get it, this person can't get it. You just have to figure out how that works. I think it is happening in some ways, because LL's doing like Rock the Bells. They're doing kind of some form of that for, you know, older art pioneers. They're being able to buy into something. I think Search is kind of doing something like that with his Timeless podcast, where he's kind of having people tell their stories and they're kind of buying into something and trying to create value that's, you know, retroactive. So, you know what I mean? We all just have to figure it out. And it's going to take that work.
We had another topic. We're not even going to get into it. I think we covered a lot of ground tonight. We talked about some stuff off the fly before Chuck T. Then we brought on the Carolina King himself, and he had a lot of informative stuff to really say. And I think we're going to end it with this, man. No doubt. You going to be on with us tomorrow?
Yeah, I'm definitely going to be on tomorrow, and I think we definitely need to get into that topic next week.
We'll save it for next week. Don't forget, we got Hakeem Green. Tomorrow, I got to message him early in the morning and then send him the link, and we'll interview him, and then we're going to get into some music reviews. And don't forget, us, send your music to livefromfayetnam@gmail.com. All genres are welcome. Everybody that tuned in and commented, we appreciated it. Man, my IndieCastle Twitter been holding like viewers all night long. Whoever's been viewing on my IndieCast, they've been staying there all night long. I just wish the comment, like Twitter, will allow you to comment into the StreamYard and stuff like that. But once again, we want to thank y'all for tuning in to another episode.
On the actual Twitter.
Oh, matter of fact, do you guys shout outs you want to do before you go? I don't really got no shout outs except Chuck T for coming on, everybody that tuned in and commented.
Yeah, man. Shout out to everybody who commented. Shout out to everybody who's listening and checking us out. Like I said, One Heartbeat Away, streaming right now. The Underground Experience, please continue to tap in. Donate. Go to the website, www.empiremusic.siq. It'll show you how to get on that funder and tap into that show, because we still got stuff going on. Also, shout out to Who's Next Music Showcase out of Dallas. I'll be interviewing on there right before we come on tomorrow. And I'll be talking about the podcast, talking about everything else I got going on.
And you know the first thing I'm doing as soon as we get off here, right? What's I'm that? Checking out that Preneur.
Oh, yeah.
of checking out that link.
No doubt.
Thanks to Chuck T. Once again, man, thank you for tuning in. Another live fan on Friday every 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and Saturdays, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Times. Peace. We out.
Beats by Trill, straight Killerville, dog.